Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Europe's B2B SaaS sales podcast. Today, not SaaS, today, tech. I'm Patrick, and I'm really happy to welcome David Howe. Hi, David. Nice to have you here today. I'm looking forward to that discussion.
Hey, Patrick. Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited for the conversation and to dig into this topic that I'm really passionate about around culture. And so, yeah, really grateful for you to have me on the podcast.
Yes, thanks. I'm also looking forward to talk around, as you said, culture today. A few things, a few words on David. So Dave is a long-term enterprise salesperson. So that's going to be pretty awesome to hear from you, Dave, a few insights into that. He is now the VP of sales at Osso VR. Pretty awesome trajectory of the company. Dave joined in 2018, was number 12, number one salesperson there. And there are 215 people at the moment in the company. So crazy growth. I mean, that's so us Europeans, you know, we look to the US and we're like, we want to be like this as well. So that's why I'm extremely excited to have the conversation to learn a bit from you guys. You know, that's my main goal, usually to learn and steal some knowledge from you. So Dave, let's launch in. As you know, we start usually with two tactical tips, but you said you prepared a lot. So let's go with three today. Let's make it even more helpful. And I hand over to you, Dave, for the three tactical tips.
Yeah, so a few tactical tips, and we can dig into these more as well. But I think, you know, really high level, when I think about culture and technology, I think about collaboration a lot. There are different types of cultures and different organizations, and sometimes different organizations need different styles. But in tech, I find what's really common and what works is a collaborative culture where you're sort of a part of a clan and every individual is really valued and it's sort of flatter hierarchy and so forth. And so I think, you know, we've been a fully remote company since 2018. So we like to joke we were fully remote before it was cool to be remote. And so we've had a lot of experience with this. And I think that, you know, when you think about that concept of a really collaborative work environment, the challenge that a remote environment brings is that it's really hard to establish those bonds and relationships when you're not just with each other, sitting next to each other, going out to grab lunch, you know, doing a happy hour. And so the process for getting to know your coworkers and spending time with them and building those relationships is a lot more challenging. So a few things we do that I really enjoy and value. First of all, when you're a new employee at Osso, everybody does a very brief, like 5 to 7 minute presentation and goes through like 7 or 8 slides about like who they are. And really, we don't talk about work in that. It's, you know, what makes you happy? What makes you smile? What's a product or something that you created that you're proud of. And so we try to really get to know everyone right off the bat. And I think that would be one is just making sure you have some kind of framework or structure in place to get to know people and make them feel welcome and understood immediately. And then I think two would be, you know, and there are different types of remote, right? We're fully remote, so we're not in the same geographic area. And so in those settings, which are becoming more common, I really think it's critical to prioritize some sort of in-person event. We do an annual retreat at Osso, and we invest a lot in that experience for our employees. But it is such a powerful event that makes everyone feel really connected, and I think is really sticky from an employee retention standpoint. And so prioritizing some form of an in-person experience, I think, is really big as well. And the last one that's really tactical, but I love, I think one of the things that you miss out on in a remote environment, when you think about different styles of communication, you know, in an office, the two digital kind of ways that we connect, which are common and still prevalent, obviously in remote as well, is, you know, email and messages. So we use Gmail, we use Slack at Osso, for instance. But the one thing you miss is the sort of ability to do the in-person drive-by, I call it, when you just swing by someone's desk to ask them a quick question. Mm-hmm. And I find that that's also a really important like way to stay productive and keep communication open and flowing. And so I always try to encourage and normalize people to call each other and answer the phone when people call you. It's kind of like a thing we don't do anymore in society, right? Like, we don't really call each other. If a friend calls me, I'm kind of worried something might be wrong. Like, why didn't you just text me? But I think encouraging people to have conversations and call each other and answer the phone and just kind of streamline those sort of things that are a little bit longer than a Slack or an email, but not requiring a meeting, is really impactful too.
Yeah. Hey, awesome tips, Dave, for companies that are mainly remote. I really like it. To the last one, calling versus texting. I also realized we did that. We are remote, but kind of hybrid because we have offices in all the cities that we are at. But we realized still, I mean, I'm the same, right? With texts, the way I write, I'm more blunt. I'm more unfriendly sometimes. It comes across more unfriendly. You can, you know, the reaction, that just doesn't happen as well with tech, with calls or with a video call, I guess, right? That's something that I realized, hey, we also said, hey guys, let's pick up the phone instead of, or do a video call instead of always texting. I think that's pretty important.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Anytime written communication, you're leaving a lot open for interpretation. And it's a really kind of funny topic for me as well. Like, I'm so sensitive to if someone like just ends every sentence in a text with periods and the last sentence has a period in it, I feel like it's someone being very direct and they're upset with me. And if there aren't enough exclamation points or emojis, then like I'm a little bit worried that I did something or they're upset with me. So yeah, I'm a little bit over analytical and maybe a little bit odd in that sense, but certainly texting leaves a lot of room for interpretation that you don't really have as much when you just call someone and talk to them.
Yeah. What was the original idea why you went fully remote? Had this to do finding talent or what was the reason?
Well, so what we do at Oso VR, we're a virtual reality surgical training and assessment platform. So we use the Meta platform for VR to train surgeons on new medical device technologies. And so we were doing this back in 2016, and it was actually our co-founder and CTO, Matt Newport, who had the idea to create a fully remote VR-enabled company. And so that you can use VR to really enable the sort of collaboration that you might get in an office. So if people are interested in this, one of the really neat things to look into, another tactical tip for you, Patrick, there's a product called Horizon Workrooms that Meta put out, and it's sort of a virtual reality co-working space. And you can put a headset on, multiple individuals can join the workspace, other employees can join via Zoom. You have a live feed of your computer monitor in the VR space. The external cameras on the headset can actually bring up your keyboard in VR, so you can type on your actual keyboard and have sort of computer type interface. You can sketch and whiteboard. It's very realistic. So it was sort of like, let's practice what we preach and show the power of remote collaboration, which is what our technology and product is really about, but do it more holistically. I think it's like really, we were ahead of our time. Remote wasn't a big thing back then. And honestly, like, I'm a little bit annoyed about like COVID revealing this to the world, because I thought I had found like the best kept secret that remote work works. And that the most powerful thing for me as a leader in the company from a hiring standpoint, I'm no longer constricted to one geographic area to find talent. And that just totally changes the game in terms of finding the best people and the right fit, especially for something really niche that we do at Oso. So that's how it started, though.
Wow. Wow. So you guys are already in the next phase. I mean, I think I heard from that, here, the metaverse and so on, but I only saw people talking, but not yet something like real. Do you use it internally and sometimes go into these VR spaces?
Absolutely. We have a lot of people in the company that are really passionate about it. I use it occasionally. I don't use it all the time, but I've definitely experimented and see the value. And also, by the way, the potential for it is like limitless. This is the first iteration and really early kind of concepts and sort of, versions of what this will become over time. But a lot of people do use it pretty regularly. We also, you know, it's important to have fun and disconnect with your coworkers. And we use it to play, like we have community time every week as well. Another tactical tip. We get together, we have time reserved in the calendar every week for an hour. It's an optional thing. People can go and participate in different sessions. So we have, you know, board games we play over Zoom that's just a browser based. We have people playing VR games, put headsets on, play laser tag or mini golf, things like that. So we use VR quite a bit in our day to day and with how we run the business. Yeah.
So much fun. Much fun. So you actually have a bit more. Yeah, you have more different means for that remote culture that could have a big impact on the culture itself. Because what do you think, Dave, are the differences between remote culture and on-site? What are the things that are that we have to, you said it already, like the connection between people. You need to make sure that there is still people feel connected. And I'm not sure, what do you think? Do you think the connection, how do the people feel with each other? You have some measurements. I love your tactical tips, by the way. So you have some tests, some measurements that you do. Do you think that is enough to make it as strong as an on-site culture?
I think it really can be. Our employee engagement surveys that we do to sort of gauge employee happiness and satisfaction is extremely high. People feel connected to their coworkers. They feel connected to the company and the mission. I think, you know, there are a lot of principles that apply around building culture, both in a traditional in-person environment as well as remote, like having a strong mission and vision and communicating that to the company and including sort of your shared values and the way that you operate and what the norms are and the sort of vibe, and also interviewing and hiring for that and building chemistry and having identity and learning and development initiatives. These are all things I think of that are just important for any and important, relevant, and just consistent with any type of in-person, remote, hybrid work environment. But it is about, you know, the connections and the relationships. A lot of those things that I talk about there, like mission, vision, value, shared beliefs, I feel like that's like the stuff you would read in like a Harvard Business Review article about culture, that like, sure, that's a big part of it. It's really important. Let's make sure we all row in the same direction or all on the same page. But for me, it's more about like the way you feel and the relationships you have with your coworkers and just the general dynamic. And so if you're lacking on that front, it just doesn't resonate with me as much as far as this culture being strong. I think even things like I've done happy hours with the team we have on a regular scheduled basis. I'll do things one-on-one with people on my team, like, hey, you want to reserve, you know, 4 to 5 p.m. on Friday and the two of us just have a beer together remotely and just talk, you know, things like that. People, I think, don't take as much time for when they're remote. And you have to show people that you care, that you have a relationship with them, that they're not just your coworker, but a friend, someone you value. And I think it's easy in a remote environment to just get too into the schedule of meetings and work and so forth and not take a step back and say, how do I make sure I'm connected to my team and my coworkers?
Another tactical tip, Dave, 5 p.m. beer on Friday. I haven't done that. I should do that as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll probably be doing it either way, so I might as well do it with a friend, a coworker.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, that's a really, I haven't done it often. I don't know yet. Probably I felt weird getting a beer and being in front of the computer, but actually it's nowadays, it's why not?
Yeah, 100%.
You said something very interesting, Dave. So because values, you mentioned values, right? Values, big part of the whole culture topic. Many companies have values, but I feel like almost none of them make anything with them. I think it's about 10% who really build in values, you know, operationalize values, like in the hiring process, for instance. Can you give us an idea on how you operationalize values in the hiring process? Like, are there specific questions you ask, or is that?
I think there are a few concepts here that are really important. And then one at the end I'll share that's my favorite. So I think the first thing is really sussing out their connection to sort of your mission and your product and what you're trying to accomplish. Because you do want people to be passionate, not just looking for a job, but that they feel like this is where they're supposed to be and that what you're doing or providing has some special meaning to them. And so asking them, you know, hey, what's your understanding of what we do and the value that we provide? And, you know, if you have your mission and core values up on your website, asking them if they're familiar with it and getting a sense for how they think about it and what their take is on it. If someone really wants to work at your company, they'll have really dug in and done their research. If they really want to work at your company and they're a strong hire, you can expect that. And so asking those types of questions. My favorite one though, and I'll preface it a little bit. I think that one of the really interesting observations I've had in my career about people that really effectively drive culture, they always have this one trait in common, and it is a willingness to be their authentic self. And they typically tend to not be people that conform to what they think others want them to be. They know who they are and they're very comfortable and they love expressing that personality. And I think sometimes another way to think about culture is like the collective personalities of the organizations and sort of like how they add up and kind of build and fire off one another. And so one of my favorite questions that sometimes really trips people up, I like to like give them a little time and let them think about it, but I ask, what makes you weird? That's my question. And I might sometimes like say, okay, like, you know, what another way of thinking about this is what makes you unique. But I kind of like saying what makes you weird, because it lets them know that it's okay to be different. It's okay to be themselves. And we really value and want that. And I think also people feel really empowered and excited about being able to just be who they are and not have to be something different. So yeah, I think those are some definite tips as far as interviewing and hiring, which is, I think, the most important aspect. If you don't, just like, you know, trying to accomplish your goals, quotas, whatever the case may be, you can't do anything if you don't hire the right people. That's the first step. And so hiring for culture and team chemistry, that has to be a part of your interview process. You have to be really thoughtful about how you screen those types of topics.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, I like the topic authenticity. I've had few debates around that, because sometimes authenticity is obviously in relation to your personality, right? Are you acting the way you are actually you actually are? I'm not 100% sure how to, because it's a very difficult thing. How do you detect? How do you see whether somebody is authentic or not? Do you have some, you know? Do you see some signs? Are there some signs, or based on the answers you get, you realize who actually that person is not herself or they're not themselves?
I think for me, I probably just like try to think and observe people that are like clearly going outside of the norms of like a comfort zone and are expressing things that are, you know, preferences, ways that they operate, sometimes like self-awareness and self-deprecation about who they are and what their tics are. But just generally, I think they're like bigger personalities a little bit. And they're okay with kind of speaking their mind and putting themselves out there. I do think it's one of those things, you sort of like know it when you see it. For sure, it's sometimes hard to gauge like the genuineness or authenticity of someone in certain settings. But I think, you know, when it comes to developing culture and the dynamic they create within an organization, it's really just like the expression of their true self, which for me, I think I can usually identify pretty clearly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I find it, I mean, also for myself, you know, I try to self-assess and I try to understand whether am I authentic? You know, I have no clue. I don't know actually, because I do know that at some point in my life, I do know that the opinion of other people, you know, matters. And I personally told myself, hey, it matters way too much to you. You know, I think also my girlfriend, when I look at her, she's thinking way too often what other people might think of what mm-hmm. she does, you know. And does that automatically then make you be not exactly who you are, but rather who you think you have to be? Like, you are more, yeah, you're probably more, you probably more follow like societal norms or norms in society, I guess. But I try to think around this.
I think everyone feels that pressure, and probably even people that are really expressive of their true self and their preferences and so forth can still be really mindful and aware of how they're being interpreted and perceived. And by the way, like, one of the, I think, most important attributes of a strong hire is self-awareness and how aware they are of themselves and how they're perceived and how they're interacting in a setting. And so a lot of those things are really important, but I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Like, I think that you can still be yourself and still be really mindful and even careful, and maybe like sometimes be selective about how you express that. But, you know, I don't know, I'll give you like an example, just if maybe it helps the audience to think about it a little bit more clearly. One of the things that I'm really, this is going to be a like comical point for anyone in my company that might happen to listen to this because it's so true. I'm like really passionate about tacos, and I talk about tacos all the time. It's like the most amazing like dish and piece of food that has like ever been invented. And I might be on a big call with executives at Johnson & Johnson, and I could literally just start talking about tacos in the middle of that conversation, but it'll be really authentic. And I'll be super mindful of how I'm being perceived and how it's landing and make sure the timing's right and so forth. But, you know, I think that what a lot of people want today, you see this in so many different places, not only just in culture, in general, they want authenticity. Like the way people are writing content on LinkedIn, the way people are writing emails, the types of just presence of people on social media in general, I think a lot of old school traditional barriers have been broken. And the real leaders from today, modern world that we live in, are the people that are just talking the way they talk and being who they are, and that you feel like you're working with someone real. And let's face it, at the end of the day, we spend most of our life and our day working. So like, why not be around people that are interesting and different and fun, as opposed to someone that's just like super serious? You can still be impressive and buttoned up and be yourself, you know? So I think those are some ideas or examples I think about, and, you know, why I think it's especially important today. And I think it's something that's really refreshing that people are not only looking for, but like almost starting to expect these days.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so I take with me authenticity, self-awareness, very important to you, like the cultural fit for the person, something in the hiring process, especially for salespeople, Dave. What else would you say are important traits that they need to have that you're also testing in your interviews?
Yeah, well, I think a common one that always comes to mind first for me, and I love this, is curiosity. And the ability to ask good questions. It's really interesting that for people that have not had a B2B sales career, that have just interacted maybe with salespeople in more like retail type environments or B2C type environments, there's a lot of misconceptions about sales. And I think if you ask someone like, well, what do you think a great salesperson like consists of, or what does that look like? They immediately are like, oh, well, some backslapping, smooth talking, you know, boardroom presenting sort of like personality that gets up and owns a room and is really slick. And some of that stuff's important, but really at the end of the day, no one's going to be influenced by you if they don't feel understood before you start sharing your perspective and what you want them to consider. So someone that's able to ask great questions, understand the customer's world, make them feel understood, is really critical. That would be one. If I had a second one that I like and I'm really passionate about, I think it's really interesting, you know, people think about salespeople as well as being really competitive. And I think most of us are, either with our coworkers, our competitors, with ourselves. I mean, you have to have some competitiveness to do what we do. It has to be a part of it. But for me, I think it's overstated as well. And I think sometimes some of the hyper-competitive people that I work with have not been the best for the organization. And I think there's a really special balance when you're trying to build a culture and a team chemistry within sales, especially in terms of the balance between competitiveness and collaboration. And I like to lean more toward collaboration. I like to find people with different backgrounds and different strengths and build a really strong culture of collaboration where people that work well with one another and support their coworkers and try to make us all successful are celebrated and awarded with recognition, promotions, opportunities, and so forth. Because, you know, that's what a team is all about, right? Is leveraging each other's strengths and weaknesses and optimizing performance based on all of us helping one another. And I think too often sales leaders overstate the importance of competitiveness, try to double down on it and create a super competitive environment, and then wonder why everyone is like at odds with each other and also not getting along with the rest of the organization because everyone's like trying to just pull resources and people onto calls and making asks and not thinking about, you know, it's just this whole thing that's a great misconception that it has to be like so intense on the competitive side. I think collaboration is really important too. And so someone that's team oriented, just like to say and add a thought that like, it's a tough topic, but I love this idea of not sacrificing team chemistry for individual performance. Mm-hmm. So a high individual performer, I would never take them on board if I thought it was going to impact the chemistry and the culture of the broader team that I have. And I think too often people just try to hire, you know, the most impressive person that's the most competitive and don't think about the culture or chemistry of the organization they're building.
Yeah, I like that. I also, one of the advice I got and I also set into practice is somebody who is, you know, performing well but not culturally a fit, if you realize at some point you get rid of that person first rather than the person who is not performing but really good cultural fit. Like the A player, B player, C and D player, for me A player is cultural fit and good performance, B player is not so good performance, but cultural fit and collaborative. Obviously, that's part of our culture as well. C players are good performers, but no cultural fit. And the D players is obviously both not great. So we also do it that way, actually, because I think performance, if you're, and that's something I test for, is coachability and adaptability. So both. One is not enough, that they can learn mm-hmm. and put it into practice. If somebody has that, I you know, I give them some time. I believe in them that they can learn everything. I don't think sales is a rocket science. I think, you know, you can learn it if you have the capacity, the intellectual capacity. And that's why. And I think culturally, you know, becoming more collaborative is longer, much longer. Yeah, that's a can be a long change. How, last question, Dave, because time is actually already up soon. collaborativeness. How do you, what is there a specific question you ask in the hiring process about collaborativeness, or yeah, how do you do that?
Yeah, I think you know, just asking questions around, you know, how they think about, for me, one of the topics that comes to mind is sort of cross-functional dynamics. I think that's a lot of organizations when I was a rep, sales would be at odds with like every department in the company, like sales arguing with everybody. And so thinking about, you know, well, tell me about how you interact cross-functionally and how you think about relationships with others outside of your department. And I think a competitive person will think very selfishly about, well, like, you know, marketing is really helpful because they do this for sales, and product is really helpful because they do this for sales. And here's how I think about all these different functions supporting me. Someone more collaborative will maybe mention some of those same points, but also you want someone that's really thoughtful and saying, you know, well, here's how they help me, but also what I'm focused on, what I'm passionate about is making the organization successful. And I also love helping other people. And so here are some of the ways that I help, you know, marketing by providing feedback in terms of what messaging is resonating, and product in terms of requests and product feedback and things that we think will resonate and land and generate revenue. And so that would be a question that I would look for to sort of gauge that. And yeah, I think the last thing I'll leave the audience with is, you know, well, why does any of this even matter at the end of the day, right? And I think that culture is so critical, and there's this debate of like culture and strategy is really important. I don't want to understate that, but I always say culture over strategy. And for me, the reason is because culture is really what attracts and retains talent, and talent is what really makes a company successful. And so when you work for a company that has a strong culture like Oso, you interview at Oso, you feel that in your interview, you feel that on day one, you feel it through year one, year two, year three. And, you know, you get connected to that, and you don't want to go back to a company where people are just working a job and going through the motions. And so I think the foundation of a strong organization is always culture, and we really have to be thoughtful about how we approach it in this remote environment. Sorry for going over time. I know I'm very wordy. I love to talk.
No problem, Dave. No problem.
Yep.
Hey, thanks a lot for joining. So we have to end it here. Dave, that was extremely insightful. We got way more than three tactical tips out of that conversation. So I think that was very insightful also for me. I do have one or two things. I definitely will send an invitation afterwards for 5 p.m. Friday beer, or 4 p.m. maybe. You said 4 to 5 p.m. So definitely we'll do that a bit more and see people a bit more, because we are also sometimes struggling as well. I mean, it's not easy. So thanks a lot for sharing your knowledge, Dave. And hope to see you around.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick. I really appreciate you having me on the show. It was a really fun time.
Thank you.